Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. Yes, even people in SEC territory. You can't spell mediocrity without the E, right? SEC. But I digress. This is Tim May, along with my able-bodied co-pilot, Matt Wilhelm, on a special week. Matt Wilhelm, welcome back to the Tim May Show. Let's fly this plane deep into the heart of the game. If you follow my drift, we're going to get to a lot of things, including a conversation with one of my great friends, John U. Bacon, who's been chronicling things about the Michigan program, good and bad, low these many years. And I'm going to get into it with him about the team, about the program, about everything else at Michigan in our little 10-15 minute session in the midst of this sandwich, which is Matt Wilhelm and Tim May breaking down Ohio State, Michigan. Just say a quick hello, and then let's get into it, Matt.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. It's always great to be with you, Tim. And I think, again, coming off of a top five victory for Ryan Day, these returning seniors and the remaining roster of Buckeyes, it's very satisfying. And just as we thought they would, set the table appropriately to transition to, you know, what is the game and what it means. And I think because of the circumstances of the last 3 years, this game, regardless of records, throw them out, will mean more for many people.
Yes. That's what you guys had to do way back in 2011. Excuse me, 2001. See, I made you feel a little bit younger than you really
Thank
are.
Thank you, Tim. I try.
2001, Jim Tressel proclaimed at that rally that they would be proud of you guys in Ann Arbor. He didn't say they were going to win. He just said they would be proud of you guys. So
sure.
I guess if it was like 13-12, at least y'all put up a fight and everybody would be proud.
Correct.
Now, that's not the way it works. But that was a moment in the series, in the greatest rivalry in sport, that needed Ohio State to step up and flip the script. You guys got it done up there in the big house. Once again, we're at that moment in time where the script needs to be flipped. It looks for all the world like it should get flipped. I mean, as we record this, Ohio State's like a 22 point favorite, as big a favorite as it's ever been in the series. What was your sense of what really turned it around back in 2001? Because it's never easy against Michigan. No matter what you think no matter what it looks like on the field, right?
Absolutely. I think you're taught the rivalry. You understand it to the best that you possibly can. And I think in some cases, not to move to like there has been some teams in the last 15 years that might have, as we spread such a wide net from a recruiting standpoint, that the game and what it means to Ohio residents. Every Buckeye fan, as you say, around the world.
Yeah.
It
Buckeye
means...
Nation's real. Buckeye Nation's real. Good.
Oh my gosh. Yes. It means so much more. And sometimes that's not truly understood by a young man, being raised not in the Midwest and then brought to Columbus, Ohio, and has to learn on the run what that really means. And I think that's the, and I think we talked about it last year or maybe even the year prior to, in this situation, we've been 0-2 against Michigan since we've been doing this. So let's get that dub this week. Right.
Yeah.
But it was the emphasis, what an Ohio man in Jim Tressel, whose family grew up in Ohio and understanding this rivalry and what it represents, educating both the staff, which weren't all necessarily from Ohio, and the team, who wasn't all necessary, but mostly most of the guys, I'd say 60% of that roster was from Ohio, and reemphasized what it means. And the one thing that I thought kind of flipped the script for us, and at first you're just a little bit like, whoa, why are we watching the Ohio State Michigan game in like March?
Yeah.
And it didn't compute because you're like, oh, I'd be like, I'd rather be focusing. I'd rather spend an extra half hour in the weight room or get back to my studies or get back to whatever,
Yeah.
But Jim Tressel would decompartmentalize the prior year's game. And of course, in 2001, the prior year's game was also a loss in 2000 with John Cooper being the head coach. But you studied the opening kickoff. And whether the offense or defense, and that maybe that first series, whether it's three plays or six plays or nine plays, and the result, and maybe the ensuing, you know, punt or punt return or, you know, touchdown, kickoff, whatever. And then you would stop. But it allowed you to take, like, you'd watch a play, and it was the emphasis in a game like this on, you know, cliche, it's a game of inches.
Yeah.
On if we had just got him down here and forced them to punt, as opposed to, you know, tackling him, letting you 2 yards, they get the first down, they go down the field and they score a touchdown, you know, on the open, whatever that happens to be. It was all the little nuances of football and how magnified they are in a game like this.
Yeah.
And I think it really allowed us to just dial in. I think it also started the, you know, the countdown clock in the facility, and the, you know, the no M around the facility, all these little traditions that started centered around, like you said, flipping the script. And I know that, you know, Ryan, both Urban Meyer and Ryan Day have, you know, continued some of them, not all of them, and probably, you know, done some of their own little twists in regards to getting ready for this football game. But we have a lot of guys, I don't know, half dozen guys that had an opportunity to go make probably more money than the significant amount of money that they're making right now on an NIL deal through, you know, at Ohio State, that are coming back not to, to go win or lose a game at Oregon, but to set the table, you know, appropriately to have this game be of meaning, which it always is.
Yep.
But also to then, you know, find that seat in the Big Ten championship game, you know, and have that opportunity to go play Oregon again. And them coming to our place, I know for me, not to be, you know, be super long-winded, but it meant more to me to play my last Michigan game at home in the Horseshoe in front of our, you know, in front of Buckeye Nation, with, you know, with my parents on the field being acknowledged for all their, you know, love and sacrifices they had, you know, in getting me to that point. But again, I say it all the time when I tell the story, I gave the best butt out, ass out hug I could to my parents, because my mind was on winning that football game, not on being, you know, celebrated in that moment.
Yeah, it is kind of awkward running out there. You know, you've got the rose or whatever for your mom, or, and everybody's, you know, everybody's peaked because it from the standpoint of the game, but you've got a, you're getting introduced. I mean, the seniors are getting in, or the last year players are getting introduced for their last game in Ohio Stadium. And it's got to be an awkward mix of emotions. I've always thought it was kind of, you know, like when they had the senior tackle, you know, it finally got out of hand. The senior tackle did in the mid 1990s. I mean, it became a pep rally, became thousands of people were there in Ohio Stadium that one year. The Michigan team was sitting in their hotel rooms already in Columbus watching it, you know, and being told how Ohio State was going to kick their butt and stuff. And of course they didn't, you know.
Right.
I mean, 1996, you know, definitely sticks out as a game that Ohio State should have won, could have won, was favored to win, and didn't get it done. But it's now that they've honed that back and stuff from the senior tackle and everything else, it's a different kind of a situation. I wanted to ask you this, though. What's similar is you're standing there and you're getting ready to play this game, and yes, Michigan is out of the running to play in the Big Ten championship game for the first time since 2021, where it won three straight. It's the bully that's still blocking the path for Ohio State to get back to Indianapolis. Forget about the national seed. If Ohio State wins on Saturday, it goes to Indianapolis, no matter what Indiana or Penn State do, and they get the rematch with Oregon. So Michigan is still playing a huge role in Ohio State's path to get back to where it wants to be.
They absolutely do, Tim. And I think I didn't go and watch the Northwestern Michigan game, but I did follow the score, and I know what we did to Northwestern at Wrigley just a couple of weeks ago, but like 50-6, you know, and it wasn't like some statistical bombardment either, where like the running back, you know, they ran for 350 or the quarterback threw for 350. It was just like a very complete game.
Methodical.
Very methodical. And I think personally, when I saw the final 50-6, I went, ooh, I wonder if they were trying to send a statement, or they wanted to put something on tape, or they wanted to just maybe create a narrative or undo a narrative that had been associated with them, because they're having a very, you know, up and down, you know, average football season, you know, hovering around 500. That score going into this game is going to shake some people up. And I also think from a schematic standpoint, and again, I didn't dive into the X's and O's, at least not yet. I'm just wondering if, you know, Sherrone Moore puts some things on tape, some concepts on tape that Ohio State's going to have to study and prepare for, that maybe, you know, I'm not trying to say they were holding back, you know, winning five football games or now winning six, but some things that are just going to make you wonder, okay, they showed this. And because they show this, they can also do, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, gadgets and throwbacks and, yep, you know, reverses and things of that sort. They're going to, at the right moment, catch or attempt to catch Ohio State. But also put a period on that and talk very briefly about, you know, the performance Ohio State's defense has had been all season long. But more so than anything, you know, looking back on Indiana, you know, just, you know, 3, 4, 5 days ago, the performance of the sacks, the frustration. I think some of the things that, you know, you and I have been talking about defensively, wanting to see more of from Jim Knowles and this defense, although they've been great all year, but some of those blitzes that hit, you know, and, you know, rushing four and, you know, playing tight coverage on the back end, just frustrates the quarterback.
Yeah.
To the point where he holds it long enough where a covered sack is now a potential thing. But I do have to say, and this is, again, this is just a hypothetical with a highly critical eye, is I just hope that if this game, if the Big Ten championship game, and then potentially, hopefully, multiple college football playoff games, that Igbinosen does not have a penalty at a juncture in a football game that could flip the script and put us in a losing situation.
What do you do about that situation? You're a coach. You're helping coach Lakewood St. Ed's.
Yes.
Looks like you guys could be playing for a state championship again, right?
And yes, that is correct.
You're a coach. You have players you have to play and or sit. You have to make decisions on that. Davidson Igbinosen, at his best, is, in my opinion, one of the best corners in the Big Ten, maybe in the college football. At his worst, he's grabby, and you can't be grabby.
No.
Especially now, when it's quite obvious the officials have got their high definition scope on you, whereas they don't necessarily have the high definition scope on everybody. So what do you do with Davidson Igbinosen this week?
That's a great question. And I actually thought about this. Not this in particular question, but like, what can he do? Right. Because you want to keep him aggressive because that's what makes him great.
Yes.
You know, he's long as a corner too. So he's naturally going to be more physical. Right.
Yes.
Which is going to, you know, so the way that a referee looks at a physical long corner is going to be as if he's going to be grabby and more physical. Right. So you might be on high alert for those pass interferences. And I think in some cases, and maybe not all of them, because he is grabby or he's early in some situations. But I think when that ball gets thrown downfield, I think maybe, you know, Tim Walton and maybe some of the defensive analytics staff pull together, you know, clips of other long physical corners, even just getting their head around late while also being grabby, while making an attempt to play the ball while also playing the man, and show Igbinosen examples of those being no calls, where you have a longer, you know, rangy physical corner playing them tight with their hands on them, all that grabby stuff that you talked about, but just simply getting your head back around to play the football and not simply almost face guarding the man while also being grabby, you know, and physical is gonna pull out a flag, you know, especially almost always in plus territory, you know. Backed up, you can weather that storm, but that's the one that hurts when they're at or around the 50 and they take those shots down the field. And it's a 50. So now you're almost entering field goal range. You're working so hard, you know, to not give up passing yards through the air or to sack the guy and stop the run. And then they get 15 yards. A 15 yard play is a chunk play, you know, in many cases. You get 15 yards for something that you can't undo. And I think that's, you know, from this point forward, we're going to play, you know, good football teams, very well coached football teams that know our strengths and weaknesses, that study us very well. And you look at, I think Denzel Burke has undone some of what, you know, he was attacked earlier in the season, you know, going back to Oregon and even a few other times thereafter, he's fixed some of that. Mm-hmm. But now Igbinosen, it's like, you know, and these penalties, and like I said, I mean, the kid's great. I think he's, again, he's the top five corner in the Big Ten Conference. I just think that If I were, and I, this is the way I think about football in many cases, is okay. Although I coach one side of the ball, what would I do to attack us if I were an offensive coach?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, back shoulder fades, you know, even coaching the, you know, the quarterback to maybe underthrow the ball to allow the receiver to come back and have a faith guarding corner play through me to get us that free 15, especially on a, say maybe in what seems like an unconvertible third and seven plus situation against the Buckeye defense. You just throw it up against that kid and it's a 50-50 shot. It's going to be a penalty in some cases, it seems.
Yeah. I always say though, if you're close enough to grab a guy, you're already covering him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're already on top of him. And then get your head back and, you know, all those little cliche things, but the ability is there for him not to do that. You know, the NFL won't tolerate that because any contact after 5 yards, you know, is almost an immediate, you know, call, et cetera. So he's not just, he shouldn't just be concerned about the Michigan game and right on down the line. He should be concerned on how people are assessing him from the next level, because he's got all the material. He's got all the physical ability to be a really good cornerback, even at the next level, because of the size deal. And so it'll be interesting. And they did put Jermaine Matthews in there the last couple of weeks to spell both Denzel Burke and Davison Igbinosin at times. That's a good thing to get a guy off the field, let him see what's going on. Hey, before we go any farther, and I want to talk about this when I come back from my conversation with John Bacon, but you know, it is a classic setup. Like you said, Michigan finally got what, put 50 on the board, but they're 128th in the nation in total offense going into the last game of the regular season. Ohio State is number one in the nation in total defense. And we're going to talk about which one of those numbers is actually the more legit, you know, or are both of them more legit? Because, you know, 10 games into the season, you are, I mean, 11 games into the season, you are who you are. But first, you smell that? You smell that bacon frying? I'm going to get to my conversation, my annual conversation with John U. Bacon. Boy, I tell you what, man, whenever I smell, I hear him too, but whenever I smell bacon cooking, man, I know who's on the Tim May Show. Once again, John U. Bacon, welcome back to the Tim May Show.
Tim, it is always a pleasure, despite our best efforts.
Here we are again.
I'll freely confess, I consider Tim May one of my best friends in this business, which tells you a lot about this business.
Yeah.
But he's a good man, a true pro, of course, and your followers are lucky to have you because you know your stuff and you're not afraid to speak it.
Hey, you read that exactly the way I wrote it. I appreciate that, John. And John Bacon, of course, everybody who ever knows me, whenever I talk about Michigan, I talk about John Bacon all the time. I'm sure they're tired of hearing about this bacon guy. You know, get me some eggs. But, John, I mean, you know, so much to talk about. We're going to condense it in a little short little segment here. But I wanted to ask you, number one, Michigan finally looks dominant in a game against Northwestern, which had gotten beaten up the week before, softened up the week before by Ohio State. But is there that glimmer of hope going into the game that Michigan can make it four in a row? Where does the glimmer come from?
All right, I'll give you the glimmer. But we're into, to preface this, though, we're into Jim Carrey territory. So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah.
Okay. Insofar as the scoreboard in Columbus right now says 0-0 and there are 60 minutes left, they have a chance.
Right.
I'll tell you why they have no chance after this. But to start out the playing devil's advocate here, I'd say a few things. One is that Michigan
obviously we're playing dumb and dumber. Go ahead now.
More apropos in our case, yes.
Yeah.
So as they say in Spanish, because I saw the movie in Spain. El estúpido y más estúpido. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
The dumb and the dumber.
Yes.
But anyway, they have a chance. I would say, if, looking at the glimmer, and again, this adds up to 3%, but nonetheless. The defense is good, and most of them came back from last year. Will Johnson, I think, is making a business decision at this point. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not a trainer, but
he's Will Johnson, a gentleman cornerback, extremely talented defensive back for Michigan, has been banged up all year.
Yes.
Whether he'll play or not, as we're talking, we're not sure.
If he's not playing versus Northwestern, I cannot see him debuting versus Ohio State.
Yeah.
That seems crazy at this point. So he's out, but the defense is very good. Wink Martindale has figured out how to coach college players throughout the season. They did not tackle well for a long time. They still don't tackle great, frankly, compared to last year. But that is, the defense can keep them in the game. And if it keeps them in the game, and Ryan Dale will probably be conservative in the first half at least, if it's within a touchdown at the half, man, Ohio State fans are tough. They have fired every coach except for Urban Meyer since World War II. And those guys, I mean, those aren't chumps. Those guys won national titles, most of those guys. So that's a pretty long list. So yes, the pressure is on Ohio State almost entirely, almost zero pressure on Michigan. Michigan's offense is abysmal, but they do have Khalil Mullins and Colston Loveland, and they find a way to get them the ball, which they have not always done. Mullins didn't even carry the ball barely at all in the first half against Indiana. That's just insane coaching.
Yeah.
And by the way, if I'm Kirk Campbell, the Michigan offensive coordinator, don't buy a house in Ann Arbor. Because
yeah, 128th in the nation, ladies and gentlemen, as we speak in total offense. Yeah. Go ahead.
That's when you find out how many teams there are in the nation.
Yeah, 133, I think, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're five from the bottom. That's not great.
Yeah.
So it's been a miserable season for that. And they'll finally throw the other intangible in, and that is that it is the Michigan-Ohio State game.
Yeah.
Weird things happen. We have seen weird things happen many times in this game. The Cooper years certainly speak to that. But I got to say, even in the Cooper years, and this is a – he gets a bad rap, in my opinion, because he wasn't beating chump change Michigan teams. It was, you know, Bo Schembechler, Gary Moeller, and Lloyd Carr, and two of those guys are in the Hall of Fame. And, like, the 95 team, okay, it's an undefeated Ohio State team. You got Eddie George, you got the whole thing. But that Michigan team was underachieving. That Michigan team should have been that good, and on that day they were. This team ain't that. This team, at its best, beats Northwestern 50-6. That's you saw their best. So I've given you the glimmer of hope, and there's where it stands. I will say this. If Ryan Day loses that game somehow, I think he's gone by dusk because the torches and pitchforks will be endless on that one. So that poor guy's got more pressure than ever. But I expect a curb stomping, and I expect that Ryan Day talked about 4 years ago, hanging 100 on Michigan in three consecutive years total. The Buckeyes have not done that, but he will not pass up his chance, and I think he's going to get it. This weekend, third, fourth quarter. What did Bo told me about Illinois? Bo hated Illinois.
Yeah.
They fired Gary Moeller after 3 years. They voted against Michigan in the 10-10 tie, the famous AD vote, all this business. And Bo told me that there are certain teams, 100 points is not enough, and Illinois is five of them. He had respect, tons of respect for Woody, for Earl Bruce, as you know.
Yeah.
So it went on down from there, but none for Illinois. I think Ryan Day is the same thing. If he's got a chance to hang 100 on Michigan, I don't see him passing it up. And at this point, he's earned it. So fair enough. So we'll see.
Hey, real quick, they became bowl eligible last week, Michigan did. I mean,
late November, my friend. Late November.
Exactly. Did that mean anything, do you think, to that team? I mean, obviously it does, right? You get to play one more game at the end of the year, just when everybody's written you off. I mean, but I look back, USC – you know, one run against USC saved the day that day. The Minnesota thing, I'm still grasping the onside kick attempt. Now, Minnesota still had to go and score after the onside kick, but it was ruled not eligible. You know, there was offsides rule. But my point is, Michigan has been so close to being to be sitting here right now with four wins. I mean, has it been – you've witnessed a lot of these games. Has it been that – is it what's it been like to watch them play this year compared to the last three and especially last year?
The phrase I use that gets the most resonance on Twitter, at least, is this team is hard to watch. If you care about serious football, and Lord knows the Buckeye fans are connoisseurs of serious football, which is why it's a tough place to coach.
Yeah.
They'll boo you in the fourth quarter versus Akron if it's not 45 points.
Yeah.
They're tough. But this has been bad football. It's not just, like you said, a 6-5 team. It's a team that gets penalized before the ball is snapped repeatedly.
Yeah.
That's coaching. I mean, the Indiana thing, just ridiculous stuff. They don't know when to call a timeout. If you're going to call a timeout, you call a timeout. You don't wait 25 seconds, then you call a timeout. It's just, it's bad high school football, frankly.
Yes.
So it's been, you know, compared to last year's team, which was, I don't know if on paper, Michigan was better than Alabama or Ohio State. I don't think they were. If you looked at the recruiting, they weren't. But, man, that team, Harbaugh got everything out of them. They're on all cylinders. Got like Mike Sainer still a couple of years ago down in Columbus. That amazing play across the end zone. That guy's a former receiver. That team was as sharp as can be, and this team is the opposite. So they could go downhill very quickly in this game, I think.
Yeah.
And the key is the defense. If Ohio State can score some points, and again, I don't see a weakness in this Ohio State team. You see more than I do, but I watch them pretty closely. What are they lacking? They're one of the top two or three teams easily in college football right now. I don't think there is the old school Alabama or Georgia team that is a notch above everyone else. I think it's three or four teams in the muddle. The team you point out, I point out that, man, they should have beaten Washington, Illinois, and Indiana. Right there, you're 9-2. Not a bad year, you know, for a step back. But you are right. The Minnesota game, down to a funky call there at the end. USC, they kind of stole that one after getting outgained badly.
Yeah.
This team could be 4-what? 4-, what does that leave you? 4-7 right now?
4-7, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's where this team is.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if you were at the Big Ten meetings back in July, and one of the questions I asked Sherron Moore was, how soon do you expect to hear from the NCAA, and what do you expect to hear? And of course, he gave the pat answer. I was basically leading into the fact that could become a big distraction. Obviously, we haven't heard the final word from the NCAA in terms of penalties for the transgressions of the last several years. Notice I've waited to throw this in there at you, but obviously from the middle of the year on, Connor Stallions, his ghost was there. Matter of fact, he was in the stands, as we all know now, after the Netflix special or whatever it was, that he was actually there for the championship game, the national championship game against Washington, just being a smart aleck, you know. But I don't want to get into what I think about that dude and the folklore that he has generated amongst the Michigan faithful, which I think is very misplaced, you know what I mean, in all kinds of ways. Cheater is the main word that comes to mind there, but past that. But my point is, how much of that hangover has affected this team from your vantage point? I mean, it's not easy to say, right? It's easy to say in retrospect, yeah, they've been distracted all along in this season, one way or the other, whether it's the coaching staff or the players or whatever. I think they lost a lot of key players, not the least of which was their starting quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, who was as clutch a quarterback as I've seen play at Michigan over my 41 years covering Ohio State. But what's just your take on, and it's still hanging over this team, where the penalties could go finally, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is the NCAA, and you and I have been around the block enough to know you want to make that bet. I don't, because I've got no idea what they're going to do on a given day.
Yeah.
I've seen, I mean, my joke about them is they're great at misdemeanors and they're horrible at felonies.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. All the evidence points to guilty, sir.
Well, and there's the other thing, too. I mean, there's no question that Michigan broke the rules.
Yeah.
Not much question to me, anyway. I'll say that. Connor Stallions, look, I mean, that's all on Michigan in terms of why do you hire a guy like this? Like anyone writing a 500-page manifesto, think twice. And the other guy who did that was the Unabomber, also a Michigan graduate, by the way.
Yeah.
So how about those two? But
I never put those two together. That's pretty funny.
How about that? The last time I've heard of three manifestos, Connor Stallions, the Unabombers, and Karl Marx.
Yeah. Hitler did one too, didn't he? A little bit.
Short list. Not too many winners in that list. But anyway. So you got this guy. If you're going to hire a guy like that, you better monitor him. They didn't. Now, where I disagree with probably Buckeyes and Spartans on this is that I don't think the advantage was very great. They almost got rid of that rule anyway. Now they have headsets regardless.
It was a rule, but
it's incredibly stupid.
Yeah.
And because the advantage, I think, was minimal, it makes it even dumber.
Yeah.
He was fired after 7 games, so the big games all coming up had nothing to do with Connor Stallions, and that's clearly still a very good team. In fact, in hindsight, you have to say the Big Ten, Tony Petitti, much maligned in Ann Arbor, as you might imagine, he did Michigan a huge favor by making it public the night before the Michigan State game last year, and they have to get rid of Connor Stallions because from that point on, you can't say it's signed. If they hadn't done that, and Connor Stallions on the sidelines for the whole thing, I'd say the national title's in jeopardy, the Big Ten title's in jeopardy. The whole thing is now in question in a way it probably isn't now. but I don't know what the NCAA is going to do. It also, Michigan has an advantage here that because the rules have changed so dramatically since then, and Michigan proved it by paying Bryce Underwood $10 to $12 million for kids not taking a snap yet.
I was going to get to that. Go ahead.
Yeah, over 4 years. But the point is, since the rules have changed so much, it's kind of like our pot laws now, when you can see a cannabis store in every corner.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to get all worked up about some guy selling pot illegally, which was illegal at the time, when there seem to be no rules now at all.
Yeah. But so I will hasten to add, you know, like the Michigan State game, for example, we all know, except for Connor, that he was the guy on the sidelines, you know, wearing the glasses and stuff.
Right.
When Michigan State hosted Central, I think it was Central Michigan, and he got on Central. The sidelines some by hook or crook. And we've already seen Jim McElwain step down as the head coach at Central Michigan, as they still don't know who that guy was and how he got on the sidelines a year and a third later. Just the intrigue about this always is the cover up and whatever else goes on after the minor crime. That's what happened with Ohio State and Tattoo Gate. You know, it wasn't.
Right.
I mean, who cares? You lose two games for trading your gold pants for a tattoo. You know, the thing about this current team is they don't have any gold pants, but at least the last 3 years, they don't have any gold pants to trade for tattoos. As I brought up with Matt.
Tattoos, huh?
Yeah, as I brought up with Matt Wilhelm.
Well, there's exactly. About a decade, about 20 years there, a whole lot of gold pants. So
yeah, but NIL affords you, NIL affords you the right to pay for a tattoo now. So, but you know what I'm saying? That will always be a smear no matter what, John.
Absolutely.
On and Michigan. And kind of the way Michigan reacted to it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you hit two good points there. One is that Don Canham, the old Michigan athletic director, a friend of mine, got to know him quite well, very smart guy.
Yeah.
Great line. He gave me the best line ever on public relations. Whenever I talk to corporations on this stuff, I tell them this stuff and they never listen. And it's this: never turn a one-day story into a two-day story.
Yeah.
It's really simple advice. It's very good advice. And no one ever takes it. Because of two things. I realize now why they don't. One, you need the humility to admit you made a mistake, which at the top level of these things, of corporations, of Big Ten football, no one wants to admit they made a mistake.
Right.
And two, they lack the confidence to believe that they can overcome that mistake.
Yes.
That is, if we admit it, it's not that big a deal. It's like taking your bogey, taking your medicine on the golf course. Look, the smart golfers take their bogeys and keep moving. And I interviewed Tiger Woods years ago at the U.S. Open, and he said, look, this is the U.S. Open. You're going to get some bogeys. You can't get a triple.
Yeah.
Triple in your house.
Exactly. I knew you were going there with that analogy. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Move on. And in this case, you know, as far as dragging it out goes, and McElwain and Central Michigan and so on, all they had to say is, yeah, he's there. We shouldn't have done it. Mea culpa. It's not on them. It's on Michigan. I mean, he's not helping Central that much, I don't think.
Yeah. He was there to, he was there to gather info for later in the year for when Ohio State, when Michigan played Michigan State, clearly.
Right. But your second point also holds that no matter what the NCAA assigns to Michigan, obviously, in some ways, the penalty has already been paid and they'll still pay it.
Yeah.
There are many, many, I mean, from the time until you and I are still doing this, Tim, knock on wood, I guarantee you that Michigan's foes certainly will always put it in the asterisk category.
Yeah.
No matter what. And that's the price you pay by having anything around it. Now, I would argue it hasn't had much of an impact on the games. But so what? You knowingly broke the rules, and there you are. Now, what Harbaugh knew and when, I don't know. He forked over his laptop and his cell phone to the NCAA, which he probably shouldn't have done. And they've said they found no connection, nothing in there connecting him with Connor Stallions. Nonetheless, you know, he's on your staff. So
nonetheless, he was standing next to your coordinator.
Exactly.
He was 8 feet from you at times, 4 feet from you at times. I mean,
think about this, Tim. This is a year later. You and I are still talking about this.
I know, but here's the thing. But that would
probably will be next year.
But that's what bothers most people, though, is how, okay, let's move on kind of thing. No. I mean, the idea that a man was on your sidelines that close to your coordinators and seeing him watching the other sideline, and granted, you can figure out signals as a game goes on. There's no doubt about it. Everybody does it. That's why everybody calls plays, you know, with a sheet over their mouth, you know, if they're on the sideline. But the point was to act like you had no idea who this guy was and what his function was, and he's that close to your coordinators. BS, you know, that's just the thing. Now, Is Jim Harbaugh a hell of a coach? I think he's proven this year. He's a hell of a football coach. I mean, he's turned the Chargers wherever they were going. He's turned them around from wherever they were going. You know what I mean? And he's where he belongs in the National Football League because he came that close to a Super Bowl championship. But I digress. Let's get into one other thing. We'll get out of here. You just brought it up a while ago. Getting the Underwood kid to flip, you know, and the money. You know, who knows really what the facts are about the money, even about Ohio State's quote $20 million NIL slush, you know, that helped bring guys back, helped bring guys into the fold and stuff. You know, the athletic director Ross Bjork admitted to it, but at least he admitted to it. You know, that there it was a big amount. There are a lot of teams paying big
Nothing
amount
illegal about it,
in the
so it's
Southeastern
fine.
Conference. It's
Right.
out there, you know. But what did that signal to you when you heard at least the rumors of what it took Bryce Underwood, who had no intention of going to Michigan, you know, 2 months ago, to make the flip? What does that tell you about Michigan's now jumping into the 21st, the next quarter of the 21st century?
That's about right. A few things. One, the rumor is $10 to $12 million. Ellison's
Over
Larry
4 years.
Ellison's,
Yeah.
yeah, 4 years. To,
That's a
by the
contract,
way,
the way I hear
let's
it.
break that one down for a second. For 4 years, look, if Bryce Underwood is still at Michigan in 4 years, something has
Yeah.
gone very badly.
Yes. Yeah.
Something
Yes.
has gone wrong. I mean, he's won 2 years, maybe, if things go the way they're supposed to. But you don't know about that either. Look, you're 17. There's still a lot of unknowns about this. We know he's gonna get a lot of money, so all right.
Yeah.
But yeah, they definitely the money talk, no question about it. Michigan has entered that game. If Ohio State paid $20 million for this team, well, Michigan just paid half of that for one guy who's not taking a snap.
Yeah.
So
Yes. Yeah.
there's that. I will say also Brian Kelly is probably Michigan's cause would help by Brian Kelly clearly having a hell of a season down there. Pretty bad year and yelling at his players and so on. He's one of my least favorite, I admit, college football coaches for a lot of reasons.
That
That
came
brought out,
through.
and Bryce Underwood, he's 15 minutes away from Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
It's still a regional sport. He's still a kid. He's still got family. That had to be a factor. So that's all in there. But what does it mean? I mean, I good for Michigan, I guess, certainly. It certainly changes things. The recruiting now becomes, now Bryce Underwood becomes your top recruiter because he wants receivers, which Michigan does not have. One huge advantage Ohio State's had over Michigan the last 20 years is receivers, maybe 30 years. And it's hard to figure
Again,
out.
this year, by the way.
You know, not even a question. Well, tell you what, this year, we don't even know because they haven't gotten the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
There's
Can
been
they
no
catch
deep
it?
ball threat. There's been, yeah, you don't know if these guys can catch or not, really.
Yeah.
Colson Lawson can catch. We know that. That's about all.
Yeah.
But anyway, but also the football as we know it. As you and I grew up with it, this is the beginning of the end of that. Now, won't be Armageddon necessarily. I recall Fritz Kreisler in the 50s, I don't recall, I wasn't there, but in the 50s said when they went to athletic scholarships, he said, oh, it's gonna be the end of it all. Well, it clearly wasn't. You know, I gotta stand on my porch and not yell at too many kids on my lawn, I guess.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, one thing I wrote years ago about, and Urban Meyer gave me one of the best quotes I've ever gotten on college football. And won a page in the book Fourth and Long, which was about Penn State mainly, but Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Notre Dame, and
Good
Northwestern.
book, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much. It was a page long quote about Michigan. I'm sorry, Penn State, Ohio State, at Penn State. Both teams were ineligible for any post game, any postseason, anything, Big Ten title, title game. Playoffs, etc., bowl games, nothing,
Yeah.
and they all just gave it on the field. It was just pure. It's what it's all about. And Urban's quote was just so damn good. I gave it a page. Again, I've never done it before or since. Well, what's it now? I used to say that, you know, when you see the Buckeyes line up in the tunnel, you see the Wolverines, you'd know at least one thing. Almost every guy on both those teams was recruited by the other team and chose for whatever reason to go to Michigan or Ohio State. And back, you know, until recently, I would say it wasn't the money. Well, now it's transactional the way the NFL is,
Yeah.
the minor league. And you raise another point about we don't know what Bryce is really getting paid. We don't know what Ohio State is actually paying or not paying or whatever. It's an odd world, Tim, when the NFL is more transparent, more ethical, and better organized on the financial front than college football is. that you have a salary cap. The salaries are transparent. You have an NFLPA that, you know, insists on certain bargaining agreements. We have none of that with college. We have no idea who's paying what to anybody. We don't know where the money's coming from in most cases.
Here's where it's headed, John.
It's Wild West, man.
It's headed to basically college football players signing contracts. I mean, whether they want to admit it or not, it's headed where college football players eventually signing contracts and being obligated to that school, not just being able to jump up at the end of a year because you only got to play 50 plays when you wanted to play 150 and going somewhere else. The only way you corral the transfer portal clearly is to put players under obligation contractually to your school, not just contractually to the NIL thing, which holds no weight right now. You know, the people are getting really rich over this that people aren't paying attention to are the litigators, the lawyers.
Imagine that.
Every time something happens, somebody's being messed over and you got a lawsuit. And that's the way it's going to continue until you do truly finally make it a business. And remember that John Matuszak line? Just when we want to call it a business, you call it a game. And just when we want to call it a game, you call it a business. You know, I got those backwards, but from North Dallas 40. And
that's right.
And they're right. But right now, you don't fault the players at all, right? Good for them. Players should have been sharing in the largesse for a while. But now with revenue sharing right around the corner, unless another lawsuit squashes it, they're going to share. And then on top of that, they're going to have the NIL. But now if you make it contractually, then you can even control that. And don't you think that's where we're headed?
We're absolutely headed that way. And there's no way we're not headed that way. I mean, with the lawsuits and everything else that are bound to happen.
Yeah.
When Nick Saban is saying the whole thing's out of control, when Jumbo Fisher is saying the whole thing's out of control, okay, I'm guessing it's really out of control at
yeah.
that point.
Yeah.
I mean, the horses have left the barn, but no one's in charge.
Yeah.
I'll give Charlie Parker credit. Barker, sorry.
Yeah.
I was the Jazz aficionado. There we go. I get that screwed up. Mark Emmert was pathetic. He was horrible. He was a $3 million haircut, basically.
Yeah.
But I think Charlie's doing the best he can, but he's one presidency late. He's doing the best he can. It will now require congressional intervention. That's not where you want to be.
Nope.
But that's where they are, and careful what you wish for, because they're going to rule something, and now you've lost some control over that. I'll say this also. When I taught at Michigan from 06 to 2019, I flunked two starting Michigan football players. Most of them were very good students, actually. They weren't all rocket scientists, but they took it seriously. They came to class, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
I flunked two of them. They're both five-star players. They're both starters. I can't use their names for FERPA reasons. I got zero pushback from Michigan, zero pushback from the coaching staff, whom I knew, from the academic counselors and so on, none of it. Well, what happens now? If you got a $12 million player and I'm making $10,000 teaching a class, some podunk little 200, you know, and I'm going to flunk this guy. I don't know. Larry Ellison going to call me?
Hey, do they still even go to school? I think they do. I know most of them are online classes.
I can't vouch for the rest. At Michigan, so far, they are.
Yeah, I know. I'm just messing with you.
So there you go. But there you go. But yeah, it's a new world. My solution.
Go ahead. Let's have the solution.
Oh no, it's too late. But the ship has passed. But I said in Fourth and Long, the way to do it is to do what baseball and hockey have had for a century, and that is viable minor leagues. Yeah. Separate the money from that, but the NCAA worked very hard to make sure there was no viable minor leagues. So they thought there'd be competition.
Yep.
No, you idiots. If the competition was prowess, we'd only watch the NFL and the NBA. Why would we ever watch college football? They're all better than these guys, not even close.
Yeah.
All right. We watch college basketball and football because of the passion.
Yep.
That's what you're telling, the sense of belonging, the sense of all these, you know, great
the jerseys, the helmets.
Exactly. So that's the way to solve this thing. Now you got this round peg in a square hole, and I don't know how you solve it. It's gonna be very messy.
Yeah. I've always said this before we go. I've always said if you took the Ohio State football team, most of it, and now they become a minor league semi-pro team, and you play them in the old Crew Stadium, which is sitting empty now for the most part, how many people would show up, really? I mean, there have been attempts at minor league football and things like that off and on forever. You know, the NFL doesn't want that either. I mean, the NFL's got a great situation
Greatest deal in
going,
the world.
always have had, about
Right.
development of talent, and then you pick them, you know, whether it's after the third year or the fourth year or fifth year. But the bottom line is, how many people would really show up? Because so much of it, you know, no one sitting in Ohio Stadium this past Saturday when they just, I think they set the record for the amount of noise, at least in Ohio Stadium, when they're playing number five, Indiana. I mean, they all had scarlet jerseys. Almost everybody had a scarlet jersey or scarlet jacket on and stuff. It wasn't a mixed bag. You know, you've got to give something to the tradition and everything else that's been laid by the people before you about making it a big deal like it is now, right? I mean, so you're worth money for playing for Ohio State or for Michigan or for Alabama, but you're not. Are you worth enough to almost bankrupt some of these schools as we head forward? No, you're not. You're never going to bring in as much, in my opinion, as what is going to be siphoned off as we go forward in this. And I could make that argument every day, but I have always been for players being remunerated, whatever the word you want to term there, because they are putting their life and limb on the line every time they play college football. And you've written books about it. I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Well, the sacrifice is real. And look, the old system is not defensible, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You can't defend a system where the players are trapped into playing college football and basketball.
Yeah.
They have no options. And while there, it's their knees, it's their backs and everything else. For decades, they got almost nothing based on this. And we both know, sadly, stories of great college grittering greats who end up, you know, in a car wash or and broken down.
Yeah.
We've seen that, and it's sad to see.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to defend that in any way, shape, or form, but you are dead right that the madness is upon us. And you know, there's no putting that genie back in the bottle.
But what was good about the old system, and the only silver lining to it, was it did differentiate between high school and the NFL. There was this niche of players who played, and I think 99% of them play for the love of the game, not necessarily the love of their university. You understand? I think that's always been the case. I mean, Will Howard sat up there after the post game in the post game on this past week against after they went over Indiana. He gave about his impassioned to talk about what the game means. It's his first year at Ohio State, but he's done his homework. We all know the game is a real thing, the greatest rivalry in sport, and he feels so honored to be now to be a part of it, maybe a major part of it. And it kind of gives me goosebumps just thinking about all the games that have come before to make this game what it is, the game what it is, right, John? I mean, it is special on Saturday.
Man, and look, you asked about the glimmer of hope. 2013, ended up being a 7-5 or whatever it was, Michigan football team, the third of Brady Hoke's 4 years. Next year, they're 5-7.
Yeah.
Bad team. It came down to a two-point conversion.
Yeah.
And that's no insult to the Buckeyes. That's what this game can do.
Yeah.
And Ohio State has certainly stolen many great Michigan seasons over the years. So this is – I can't say you can throw out the records this weekend. The gap is way too big.
Yeah.
But I can say it is not necessarily a rational contest.
Yeah.
And why? Because it matters so much. And why does it matter so much? Because – Howard got it right. It's 100 years, more than that, of people caring about this game. And I hope they don't screw this up. The playoffs might. But you get one shot. You and I are both in that great HBO rivalry video. They did a great job on that one. And you don't. There are no second chances. You lose this game, and Jim Mandich said it, and you know everyone else said it too. It is 365 days of pain. That's what the deal is.
Yeah.
And okay, you can say it's a throwaway season and so on, but you know what? If Michigan loses this weekend, they probably will. You got those guys have not lost to Ohio, there's probably no one on that bench has lost to Ohio State.
Yeah.
Well, great. Now you know what that's going to feel like. And it doesn't matter who's down and who's up. It's still the same two schools, and the gold pants are still the gold pants.
Yeah.
So you got 365 days to think about that.
Yeah.
And it's not a divisional thing. You don't play them twice. No second chances. Even if you have a great season, and Ohio State has had great years and lost to Michigan and vice versa, there's no way you could be national champs. I mean, Ohio State almost was when they almost beat Georgia after losing to Michigan a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
How would that have played? They'd be national champs.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, people would still be bitching that you hadn't beat Michigan. It's like, but you're national champs.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how
field goal they are.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio State could literally, after this game, if they win on Saturday, Ohio State could play the Big Ten championship game. If they win that, they would have to play three more games to win the national championship. If they lose that, they'd have to play four. You know what I mean? They'll probably still make the playoff. My point is there's a one, two, three, four, five games that could come after the game for Ohio State. That's why you and I have both always looked at this. This is a one-game season, you know, what we're about to watch on Saturday once again. And it does mean a lot. I mean, it means so much to Ohio State fans, you know, and you know it does to the players like you've delineated.
Well, also, based on Connor Stallions, I guarantee you the argument is going to be made if Ohio State wins on Saturday, which we both expect, that, well, if you're not cheating, then we beat you. So that's going to be how it plays.
Yeah,
if
of course.
Therefore, if Michigan wins on Saturday, again, I give it a 3% chance. But if they win on Saturday, that will be the most devastating loss in the history of Ohio State football, because not only had they lost that game against a clearly weak Michigan team, but then the argument about cheating and so on is less effective.
Yes. Yeah. It's up to Michigan to prove that point, though.
That's also true. NCAA is going to come, and then we'll see what they have to say. So
exactly. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, the incomparable John U. Bacon. Nothing smells better than the Tim May show with bacon cooking.
Hey, bacon frying. Famous plug. The next book is called The Gales of November, The Untold Story of the Edmund Fitzgerald. And, hey, you Buckeyes, about a third of the crew of 29 came from Ohio. The captain, McSorley, is from Toledo. A lot of guys from Toledo and Cleveland and Ashtabula, home of Urban Meyer also. I got Urban Meyer's name in the book based on that.
Wow.
One of the guys from Paul Ripa played high school football at Ashtabula. He was on the crew. Great guy, too, by all accounts. So,
John, real quick, we talked about your the Halifax Explosion book, which I thought was so damn good. Your book that made the New York Times bestseller list, was it called Lead? No, what let them lead. Yeah, fantastic book. But when you're doing a thing on the Edmund Fitzgerald, which everybody knows about, by the way, who's the guy that wrote the song?
Gordon Lightfoot.
Gordon Lightfoot. I actually raced in a celebrity race at Mid-Ohio one time back in 1985 that he raced in also. I got knocked off the track on the first lap. that's neither here nor there. Bottom line is, when you're doing it, I would think every time you turn over a leaf, there's another leaf, right? There's a leaf with something on it, but then you turn over that leaf and there's a leaf with even more on it that you want to jam into a book, right? I mean, how tough is that exercise been? Because you're still kind of headed pell mell. As soon as we hang up, you're going to start typing again, to finish the draft of this book, as you and I talked about. Not the draft of the Edmund Fitzgerald, I was trying to throw a little nautical term in there. But how tough is it to just finally winnow it down, man, to the book? Because you got to have stacks.
You've done that for years in your articles and your feature stories and your columns and won a lot of awards for it. This book is going to be around 100,000 words, which is pretty typical for a book, about 300 pages. I cut a whole book out.
It was 2,000
words. I cut it down to 100,000 words. It's worse than usual in this case. But no, Dorothy Parker, the old famous New Yorker writer, said, you have to kill off your little darlings. You can't fall in love with the stuff you're going to cut.
Yeah.
It's like tryouts for your football team and you're starting the lineup and so on. It should be painful. If it's not painful, you probably have a lot of bad players.
Yeah.
You should be cutting good players. And that's what has to happen in a book.
But I remember, I wrote forever. I probably wrote a million stories, is my estimate. Probably not that many anywhere close, but a lot. And you always, no matter what you cut out of the story, or you never put it in the first place because you know you have to cut it. You know, when you're on deadline or something like that, you got to go fast, right? And, but you always have that in your head. Like, man, if I'd have just gotten this piece in there, you know what I'm talking about? Because they are your little babies, right?
I'm already going through the list and saying, okay, can I sell that as a separate article somewhere else?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like trying to find a farm in upstate New York to send your, old dog. It's like, you don't want to put him down.
Yes.
So you have to tell yourself that, oh, no, he's going to find a happy home somewhere.
Yeah.
So whether you're lying to yourself or not, that's the other question.
And so we're going to find out on Saturday whether the gales of November blow foul for the SS Ohio State. I mean, everything looks like this is a magnificent ship plowing toward the Big Ten championship game, a rematch with Oregon. Will the gales of November prove foul? What do you think, John U. Bacon?
I think that Michigan might keep it close for a half. And I think, you know, Ohio State will probably be pretty conservative at first. But I just maybe I can make up a scenario where Michigan wins this game, but it would be it would test my abilities as a creative writer.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 45-10 Ohio State on this one. That's what I think.
Yeah. Last thing, as I like to say, it is so cool when you reach a point in the season where the only thing that matters from a game is the W, and the only thing that matters from the game is did you win it? Nobody cares about how much, right? I mean, through history,
yeah, you're right.
You know, we won't
Style
be talking
points
about
don't count
that.
For much.
Yes, exactly.
And I mean, look, they might get it's not a great Michigan team, obviously. They might get beaten up a little bit by the pollsters saying, okay, you beat Michigan, let's say, you know,
right.
21-14 or whatever. So what?
Yeah.
You got gold pants. You are the Big Ten champions. They'll probably get Oregon the next week. And by the way, on that one, I would bet on the Buckeyes just because they would be that much sharper and tougher.
Yeah.
You're right. There's one game where style points don't count really for a damn thing. You win or you lose.
Yeah.
And as I said in one of those videos, if you think it doesn't matter, tell it to the guy who lost.
Yeah. Win or lose, good time Charlie's got the blues. Ladies
and
gentlemen, the incomparable John Bacon. John, thank you once again for joining the Tim May Show.
Tim May, always a pleasure, my friend. We'll see you down the road.
You got it, brother. Man, I always enjoy my conversations with John Bacon. He's an author. He's written about the Edmund Fitzgerald, about the big explosion in Halifax, Nova Scotia back during World War I, a bunch of other books. He's got a New York Times bestseller about how you should really coach youth sports, which, you know, has gained quite a bit of acclaim. So John U. Bacon, and by the way, he's chronicled Michigan football history. Seems like forever, even though he's not anywhere close to as old as I am. He may be as old as you are, Matt Wilhelm, a little bit older.
Wow.
But that shows how old you are now. But I digress. You know, I kind of I alluded to what I wanted to talk to you about immediately after the conversation with John Bacon was Ohio State's number one in the nation in total defense. Michigan's number 128 in total offense. We'll talk about offense, Ohio State's offense versus their defense in a minute. And their defense doesn't appear to be on paper anywhere close to what it was the last several years, but it's still incredibly lethal. They still stop the run. I think they're number four in the country to stop and run, but they're average at best against stopping the pass. But first, let's talk about that first. So you've gotten to see Michigan a little bit. You've seen their highlights, et cetera. They've been inept occasionally on offense this year, but all of a sudden they found something. But did they? They were playing a team that had just been, you know, physically beaten by Ohio State the week before. You know, I think that always matters. If you can ask anybody in the country, but what do you see about their offense that should give Ohio State's defense pause on Saturday?
I mean, again, there's always going to be something. I think for Michigan, it's there. I think they're on their third starting quarterback. So like the quarterback position, not being dialed in and really having an identity with whomever that might be, whether it's a, you know, pure pocket passer, a dual threat guy, or the Orgy kid's more of like, you know, a true run threat pass second kind of guy.
Yeah.
Doesn't allow you to get into, you know, build any continuity and get into a flow. So that's something that I think Michigan's been struggling with. And it seems like they, to your point, they've kind of dialed in and picked a guy and they're going to roll with him. I do think if I were Michigan, I want to think game flow. How do we win this football game? If I were Michigan, how would I attack Ohio State given, you know, how efficient we are in defenses? I would want to create a game that keeps it close. I think, you know, on both sides, I think Michigan's defense is not going to want to give up the big play and force us to go on 10, 12 play drives and score points and down the red zone where the field gets tight.
Yeah.
Offensively, what I would do is I would get into our heavy personnel and like mitigate our athleticism, especially like with, again, not the emergence, he's been there the whole year, but Sonny Styles playing his best and with Cody Simon playing his best and the defensive backs, you know, being, you know, playing guys, you know, just so tight, it makes it very difficult And then now the pass rush is hitting. I'd want to 3 yards. I know it's 3 yards in a cloud, 3 yards, 4 yards, getting a third and three, third and manageable situations for this offense where, you still got the Loveland kid at tight end who's a great player. A tight end in many cases is a young, inexperienced quarterback's best friend. So some routes to him where you can, find open spaces in zone or win in man-to-man situations. But I would expect Michigan would want a low scoring football game, no explosives. They have to understand that explosives may not be available to them, but also looking back on past history and why I think a heavy package or heavy personnel grouping is going to be very fitting for Michigan is because in the past, and gosh, I saw it firsthand being at the Horseshoe years ago, Donovan Edwards pops multiple, 50 plus yard runs.
Yep.
When, they go heavy, everyone in the stadium thinks and knows they're running the football. They run it one guy, that one gap, we get a little bit of, get knocked out of our gap and all of a sudden that run pops and there's, one broken tackle and it's hit you out on the goalpost. So I think that's going to be the recipe that Michigan's going to want to follow. But like I said, statistics and records in this football game, because it's going to be all hands on deck, all the creativity offensively of little trinkets that Michigan's maybe been working on and never run in a real football game is now going to be in play against the Buckeyes.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting because, I'm watching that Indiana game and everybody was worried, like I said, about the back shoulder throws, about the quick passing game by Rourke. And Ohio State, it's kind of like snuffing a fire at its source after that first scoring drive, which was 70 yards by Indiana. It had 53 net yards for the first half.
Right.
Means they lost minus 17 net their next several possessions. Ohio State turned up the wick. Cody Simon, who should be a finalist for the Butkus Award, but didn't even make this semifinalist list. I think he's playing as well as any linebacker in the country, not just on being aware and being where he's supposed to be, but dynamically making plays.
Yeah.
What is your take on Cody Simon, especially going into this game?
Well, yeah, he wears the block O for a reason, right? Because of the player and the person that he is. And it's very satisfying, for a Mike linebacker like myself to see a Mike linebacker making plays again, making plays at or around the line of scrimmage or in the offensive backfield.
Yeah.
It's very satisfying. And I think it's, he kind of walks the walk and you look at the other linebackers in the second level, with the Reese kid and even Sonny Styles, it's like they're younger and kind of inexperienced. So to have him as a leader, just do it every week, very workmanlike, very lunch pail guy. And now he's making these splash plays. And you can see the defense kind of feed off of him making these plays,
yep.
which is very satisfying. And I really do think that, Ohio State, as it pertains to that first drive, it's always going to be tough because a defensive coordinator by nature is not going to come out overly aggressive. You're going to get an understanding and a feel for how are they going to attack us? What personnel groupings, what formations, what motions, what new actions are we seeing? And you're going to kind of weather it. That's why in many times you see maybe a team get two or three first downs and then they get to around the 50, then it fizzles because then you also settle into how they're attacking you and you force a punt. That wasn't the case. And we got them in the third down. And like you said, that quick passing game, small little voids in our zone where, Rourke made the throws, they made the catches and moved the chains, got that first down. But I also think I was not at the game, but it's like, it didn't seem like the fans or the players were all that bothered to go down 7-0.
Yeah.
Like there was no panic in this football team. And I think that, because of the hype of Indiana and the hype of this football game nationally, could have been a thing where you just start second guessing. But we didn't, we just kind of held pat. And then to your point, like everything that we thought and probably practiced and maybe even studied on film started to live itself out. We started to just suffocate their run game. Yep. I know they got the edge a couple of times, maybe it was frustrating me as a defensive coach when they get the edge and, break a 12 yard run around the sideline and we didn't fit it appropriately. But it just you settled in and you just suffocated them. You know, you got the sacks. I think then you get Rorick kind of getting happy feet in the pocket and holding the football, waiting for some of those down the field routes to develop. And then when they never did, because we went from, you know, we played the zone early and then went to man, where we have superior defensive backs against their wide receivers, where we probably felt that was a strength and a great matchup for us. They started cover tighter. Quarterback doesn't feel confident throwing the football anymore. And then some of those new patterns, those new blitzes, and they're even our rush just started to hit and bear down on him. And it was just too much.
Yeah. Ohio State has found a pass rush. You know, that was what the big coming out of the Oregon game was. Where was the pass rush? Where was the pressure? Well, they were playing against a really dynamic quarterback in Dillon Gabriel, a big aware guy, smooth operator and stuff. But you got to admit, since then, the pass rush has torqued up big time by hook or crook, but it's torqued up big time. I mean, when Ohio State brought Lorenzo Styles off the slot receiver, put him between the tackle and the guard, they already had Cody Simon outside the left tackle, well outside the left tackle, and they both rushed. And that's when Cody Simon forced that fumble with that big, huge hit on Rourke. That was Cody Simon was untouched on the play. The left tackle didn't know who to block. Both Styles and Simon could have made the sack on that play. And this is against a seasoned team that had come in, was feeling pretty good about its offense.
Sure.
I mean, that just shows you what Knowles and his staff have done over the last several weeks, right?
Exactly. That's the perfect point that I was gonna make is calling, you know, constructing a blitz or constructing, you know, a rush. But also having studied and to know exactly what protection you're gonna get.
Yeah.
To the point where we know when we show this look, that tackle's going to fan, that guard's going to go down, and we're going to get the back, and we're going to blitz two through that. So the back's got to pick one of our two free blitzers through that B gap.
Yes.
So that's like when you go, and like I say, it doesn't always happen this way, but when you go up to a whiteboard and you draw X's and O's and you draw what you think should work, and then you actually practice it all week, and then it lives out in the game, it is very satisfying for a staff.
Oh yeah.
On study, on preparation, on also building, you know, that defensive look to then and then executing it in the game. In a game of this magnitude, it's very satisfying. And I think that's what you're trying to build on. And I think, like you said, it's been a slow build where there was some frustration centered around pass rush with Dillon Gabriel having forever and then also evading and escaping and winning with his legs.
Right.
And that has slowly, maybe not against great passers each and every week, but gotten better every week. And it kind of culminated in itself against Indiana. And I think it's something that we will build on again in the game and then absolutely take into the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get down to it here. What if you were standing in front of the team on Saturday and given like that Newt Rockne style speech, which I think pregame speeches I've always heard from players, even maybe from you, they sometimes can distract you. You know what I mean? As opposed to just go out and take care of business you've been working on all week, you know? And, you know, it's really funny because we were talking about, I didn't get into it you earlier about understanding the Ohio State Michigan rivalry and how being from Ohio kind of helps, like with Jim Trestle and stuff. And I always hasten to remind people, well, Woody Hayes was really the guy that really.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he lost his last three games and Ohio State didn't score a touchdown in any of them against Michigan. You know, so just your proximity to the program doesn't mean, you know, that it's going to still, growing up, it's still going to make the difference. What makes a difference, you think, for Ohio State on Saturday in this the game before getting to where Ohio State really wants to go this year?
I would say, and I know that I've been like kind of like half-heartedly joking about it all year, but the unfinished business mentality and the mantra that many of those guys who had opportunities to go to the National Football League but didn't and came back to accomplish. Although you would love to play in the Big Ten championship game and play in the college football playoff, and I know that one of the 2 years or 3 years that we did that we lost to Michigan, you don't want to be the class, which was so star-studded, you know, what, first or second, third in the country as a recruiting class, and you want to have, I mean, these guys, this senior class and this group who came to Ohio State to make history has done anything, but they've made the wrong kind of history, right? And my whole point is like that goose egg of none of them have gold pants. And so there's something to be said about being a legacy football player and coming back to Columbus and going to games. And you can be a great player, but if like you didn't beat Michigan and you didn't win the Big Ten championship and you didn't compete competitively for a national championship. And I know that one of these last 3 years with losing to Michigan has done that, or at least has, you know, opportunity to win a national championship a couple of years ago. But like, if you don't have that, that's a knock against your legacy.
Yeah.
You could be an all-time sacker. You can be an all-time rusher. You can be an all-time receiver. But like, if you don't have these like cornerstone type of like legacy wins under your belt, you're just a really good player.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Ohio State has thousands of really good players. Yeah. But it's, I mean, my gosh, like my buddy Zach Bourne, like the picture of him knocking down, you know, standing over Denard Robinson, you know, in a Michigan win is something that will live on for hundreds of years of history. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And these guys don't have that.
Yeah.
And so that's whomever's giving that Newt Rockne speech, whether it's Ryan Day or he brings in a guest, is talking about undoing the narrative associated with this crew.
Yeah.
And this team. And that's Ryan Day and his staff as well.
To put it bluntly, if they were going into a tattoo shop, they have nothing to trade.
No, correct. Correct.
Tattoo gate would never happen with these yeah. guys.
What a, because they have a losing hardware. Cotton Bowl ring.
Yeah.
They nope. can take my losing Outback Bowl rings and their Cotton Bowl ring and exchange them for, you know,
yeah.
a $300 tattoo.
Yeah. I guess they do have a Rose Bowl victory over Utah, you know, the fourth year players and stuff, but
sure.
That was dramatic. But nothing beats a pair of gold pants and a Big Ten championship.
Well, go back to this, Tim. Here's what I'll say. I mean, in today's era, maybe I'll say when I was probably being recruited, like mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
It was, you might at that juncture, from a recruiting standpoint, is come to Ohio State, go and win the Rose Bowl. And potentially win a national championship,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
That was maybe the narrative, you know, because of what the Rose Bowl represented at that time. And now it's been kind of like watered down, although it's, you know, maybe still sort of the granddaddy of
quarter,
them all.
It's a quarterfinal this year. Yeah.
Sure. But still, but the way the rotation of games being played and like they're all really sort of special, but nothing, none more than the other. Like that's gone. The Rose Bowl's gone.
Yeah.
You know, from what it represented to the Big Ten for so long because of, you know, bowl championship series, the rotations since college football playoff started. But it's Big Ten championship, national championship, beating Michigan.
Yep.
And if it's in the last 15 years since Jim Tressel made it like a year in, year out occasion to beat Michigan and play for a Big Ten championship, and Urban continued that. So like, that's why you come to and compete for a national championship. That's why you come to Ohio State.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Rose Bowl is a trinket, you know, that might sit on a shelf somewhere, but it's not going to be showcased the way that your gold pants are, your Big Ten championship ring, and or your potential national championship ring as well.
Yeah. Because, you know, if you put that Rose Bowl win thing on your mantle, you almost have to have a little mini screen there showing the dramatics of why that's special, but the big come from behind win and stuff.
Correct.
When you have a pair of gold pants, it says you beat Michigan. When you have a Big Ten championship ring, it says you won the conference. And when you have a national championship ring, you're not wearing yours right now, are you?
No.
You could
but
show
I'll just
people.
Say, I'll just say, Tim, speaking for myself, it's like, you know, I proudly say I have two pairs of gold pants, right?
Yeah.
And I also, you know, And I also convey the other thing that I also convey, and this is no knock against anybody, but it was like I was 0-2 with John Cooper and 2-0 with Jim Tressel because of that, the shift that happened in my 4 years there.
Yeah.
And I think it goes back to, as I said, when players come to Columbus, it's like great player. If some, you know, not so huge Buckeye fan goes, well, how many times you beat Michigan?
Yeah.
Yeah. That, like that's a question that should be asked in the you know, in the first 5 minutes. And for someone to say zero. You know,
yeah.
Or it's and why it should tarnish your legacy to a certain extent.
Yeah. 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 It's tough to live with the rest of your life, but it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Hey, Matt Wilhelm, by the way, one quickie I wanted to ask you. Post game on last Saturday, Will Howard said he's looking around the room. We're looking around the locker room the last several weeks, and he sees guys playing, having that look and playing with an edge. It's been turned up is the word he would call it. Do you see the same thing in this team? I mean, obviously Saturday will tell the tale, the beginning of the tale anyway, but do you see the same thing in this team the last couple of weeks that obviously both these last couple of wins were come from behind wins. Even the win at Penn State, they came back from 10-0 down, but it just seemed like the resolve was there that they were going to find a way. What do you
Yes,
see in this team?
I see it as well, and I think even going back to the Penn State week with Will Howard, speaking about being slighted as a Pennsylvania kid, essentially not being recruited by Penn State, and it's like so to have our leaders, Cody Simon and Will Howard, and Jack Sawyer and these guys that came back, playing angry, playing with a chip, playing frustrated, probably because they have that blemish against Oregon. And everything since then has been working towards the game and probably that next shot at Oregon again. And I'll say honestly, like it's the way it flips for us, but like St. Ed's is still rolling in the playoffs. We lost to Cincinnati Molar 35-30. They were very beatable. We thought we could have beat them. It was a close game. They're a very good football team. We could get them again in the state championship game. And it's like, and we want that. We want them again. And I think that, so there's a hunger about our group to go beat whoever's in front of us to go attempt to do that again and play them and get another shot at them. And it feels very similar to the way that Will Howard and our leaders and this team is playing situationally. And the narrative they're kind of putting off throughout the week, out of respect for their opponent. But then also post game, it's kind of like, cool, we did what we're supposed to do. Who's next in, like, what's the next challenge? We're not afraid of that moment anymore. And that's great about this group.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. There's Matt Wilhelm. I'm Tim Mace, the Tim Mace Show. We're going to be back to hash this all out. I think we're going to be talking also about Ohio State's rematch with Oregon. Oregon, of course, is already in the Big Ten championship game. Ohio State is trying to get to the championship game. And the only team standing in their way is Michigan.
How funny the way it worked out.
What a roadblock Michigan has been the previous 3 years. We'll see if that roadblock continues. I have a feeling it's not going to. What's your gut feeling on this one, Matt?
My feeling is that the talent, and I think also the defensive and offensive efficiency, the way that Will Howard has been playing, being strategic with the ball. I think the two-headed monster in Travion and Quinshon Judkins has been very beneficial to this offense. I think also having a top five opponent, a very tough opponent in Indiana, to allow that offensive line to have some continuity of playing together ahead of the game will be significantly beneficial. And also just defensive efficiency is just so high. I just don't see, no matter how you look at it, Michigan being able to dig into their bag of tricks often enough to just catch us off guard and make those big plays. But I do think it's going to be ground and pound from a Michigan standpoint. Maybe some Q run zone read to kind of have us chasing really those running the Cummings guy and Donovan Edwards, or is it Mullins or Cummings?
Mullings. Yeah.
Mullins. Sorry, yeah, I got him. I mixed them up.
That's all
Mixed them
right,
both
man.
up.
Just
But
don't
it's
call him late to the huddle.
yeah, right, exactly. So it's stopping the run and forcing them in third and long situations, where I think plays into our hands, given the pass rush in the past few weeks and how tight we can cover up their skill on the outside.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, that's why Matt Wilhelm's a co-pilot and he gets to fly the plane most of the time while I just kind of sit back, snooze, relax, have a little snack, watch a movie. Matt, we're going to be back. We're going to be rewatching Ohio State, Michigan. We're going to be probably, in my opinion, peering ahead to Ohio State versus Oregon, the rematch, part deux.
Yes, sir.
But man, until next week, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Matt Wilhelm, we will see you then.